Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professors in Podcast. As always, we are delighted that you're here with us today. I'm Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of The Professor Is In, and the person who helps with your editing your job documents and negotiating your academic and academic adjacent job offers and stuff like that, and your social media impresario and your designer of mugs that say, I ban with joy and alacrity. Check the website for those.
Hi, I'm Kel Weinhold, and I am an academic productivity coach. And I wanted to give you a little bit of information here. We have managed to navigate the departure from our previous podcast host and now are hosting the podcast on our own website. You can still get it at all your podcast feeds, so don't worry about that. But what we'd really like to ask you to do is help support the podcast because it is now a money costing venture. So if you are interested in supporting the podcast, we invite you to come over and be a member. There's a whole bunch of little perks that you get that are listed, but the URL for you to do that is a bit.ly URL, which is bit.ly/tpiipod. So come on over there. You can join for $3.99 a month. Helps offset the cost of the podcast because we'd like to keep doing it. So come on down.
Yeah. If we get 100 people subscribed, we cover our monthly costs of the podcast, and we are up to 39 as of today. Now, you'll be hearing this several weeks from now, so I'm not sure where we'll be when you hear this. But
Yeah. I think when you hear this several weeks from now, we should be past the vote by the Electoral College. So really, who knows where we'll be? Anyway, we are wrapping up today our series on how to leave your toxic relationship with the academy, whether that means leaving or leaving the relationship. So today's the
meaning whether you go post-ac and actually leave the academy, or you stay in the academy with your academic job, but you resist the toxic relationship that is so easy to fall into with the academy.
So last episode, we kind of challenged you to rethink the way you think about your skills and how you are trained to, in a very strange way, narrowly see yourself as only able to do something. So if you are a scholar of philosophy and it is clear that you're not going to get a philosophy position and you decide to go somewhere else, it is really easy to stop full in your tracks and think, I don't have any skills. And we really walked you through how to rethink that. So if you missed last week's episode and you're struggling with what am I going to do next, be sure and listen to it because I think we give you a very encouraging view of really what you do know how to do. And this week we're going to talk about aiming toward what you want and shifting your perspective to say, what do I want to do with my time?
And instead of the, what don't I want?
Right.
To turn toward what do I want?
What do I want? And
why I can't do that to why, how I can.
Right. And the thing, the metaphor that because I'm all about the metaphor, you know, the metaphor that I think about this particular phase of the job relationship, whether it's leaving the job or changing your relationship with it, is to think about the job as if you were a kayaker and on water. And so one of the things that you learn really quickly when you kayak or on any kind of rapidly moving water is you're much better served going with the flow than against the flow. So if you start to envision your new position or even the job that you want to stay in, if you're sort of constantly fighting the idea of it, you're constantly like, that's not going to work. I can't do that. I better turn here. When the water is clearly flowing in that V downstream and you're like, but I better paddle over here to the side and see if this thing that I don't really want to do, but I might do because I'm afraid, I better go do over that and I better do this. And so really start to think about where does your energy want to take you? Where, when you sit there and you think, okay, the way you spend your days is the way you spend your life. How do you want to spend your days? And beginning to sort of start saying, I want this. I want to live close to family.
Right.
I want a parking place. I want my job to be finished at 5 o'clock.
Right. Where I thought you were going to go with that, and maybe you did, you just didn't say it,
is that maybe you did in your head.
I was being born and growing up in Pittsburgh, I had no experience with whitewater rafting until I came out and met your family out in Oregon. And I seem to remember that your dad telling us that you had to aim for the V.
Yes.
You have to aim for the V. If you don't aim for the V, and by the V, what I mean is you're on the water, there are these rapids. The rapids form around rocks. So if you have rapids, you have rocks. There's no way around that. That's a structural reality. And because the rocks create the rapids. And that the danger is you'll get stuck, you'll hit the rock or get stuck on the rock. And
Or you get sideways.
Or, I mean, not just rocks, but also tree stumps and stuff like that, and or logs. And that if you aim for the V, and the V is a natural thing that the water forms in the rapid, that you will be finding what the natural through point of that rapid.
Right.
So what I thought you were going to say was that make sure you're aiming for the V.
Yes. I mean, you're right.
As opposed to looking at the rocks?
Right. Well, that's the next step. So we're going to talk about the rocks, that's what you're exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm saying stop fighting the water.
Mm-hmm.
Stop fighting where you think you want to go or what ain't. Instead, step back and say, look, I want to get to that point, right? So maybe you put in and you head down the river and you're like, I want to get to this place. You can say, well, I want to go that way.
Right.
And get there. And you can end up capsized. You can end up stuck in an eddy. Yeah. You can end up all sorts of places.
Right.
If you refuse to read the river.
Yes.
And they read the river by exactly what you're talking about. You say, look at the water flowing between the two difficult spots. And that's where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you get between the rocks. That's how the water keeps moving. That's how you don't end up in an eddy. If you don't aim for the V, or you panic and start paddling in different directions, you can go into the V sideways, which will most likely end up with you dumped out of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So that first
part
is really...
So it's not just aim for the V, it's aim for the V pointing forward.
Right, aim for the V pointing forward.
This seems like a pretty good metaphor. Although I guess you know how I am. I'm so literal, and that's both my greatest strength and my greatest weakness and the greatest annoyance to a very non-literal person like you.
Right. A metaphorical person. Right. I'm truly a metaphorical. I'm not even sure I'm a person. I'm a blade of grass.
What's the river in this? Because if you're trying to change your relationship to the academy, change your job,
let's just say relationship to the academy.
Or whatever. I was trying to make it a little bit more concrete.
Okay,
like you've had it, you didn't get the tenure track job, you've realized it's toxic in the academy for you, and you decide to leave. What's the river?
Well, I mean, you could go really big, like the river is actually your life, or the river is your work life. So let's narrow it down to what you want to do for a career. You're going to put in at some point, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a place where you put your boat in the water and you say, I'm going to go work.
Right. Because I do have to support myself.
What I see for a lot of academics is they put in the river and say, I'm going to be a professor.
I see.
And so.
I get it.
And say, okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Except there's going to be a point in the river where you're saying, I want to be a professor. That's I want to be a professor. And there's no way to that point.
The job market is the eddy. The job market is the bramble. The job market is the rocks.
Now
is
you
the thing
been,
that you literally cannot get through because it is a structural.
Right. So look at
tangible physical obstacle that your boat cannot get around.
Right. And you and I have been in the water together enough that we have both had the experience of mucking it up and ending over at the side of the river with the branches hitting our face at the shore. Like, why? My dad going, what are you doing?
Right. Or one time we ended up, what's the word? What's it called?
When you
high-centered. High-centered.
We're centered on the rock.
Yeah, on the rock, just sitting there with the river going around.
But you also have seen, and I have been in the boat before, where you're kayaking in your own boat. And let's just say right now I'm talking about inflatable kayaks, not the hard-sided,
important to say
flip-over, fancy pants.
Because they act differently.
I'm actually just saying, okay, we've got an inflatable kayak. We're coming down the river. And we misread the river. And go off to the left when the V is to the right.
Right.
And suddenly there's 3 inches of water.
Right.
And you're just sitting there
right.
in no movement. So it's not even an eddy. It's right. just like,
you're stuck.
I went where there's nothing.
Right. Because it's easy to do that if you're not experienced reading the river.
Really,
they both look like, so, you know, the river, it forks and they both look equally valid. And it turns out one only had 3 inches of water and the other was the main point.
But it's also really easy to do it out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to look and think that is way too much for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about class fives, folks, for anybody who knows
right,
about
right,
water.
Right.
I'm not
no.
saying, oh,
we don't
look, we're not
stuff.
Talking about that. So there's not a point at which it's really that dangerous
mm-hmm.
unless you go in sideways and that's blah, blah, blah. And if you have on a life jacket and you have on a helmet and you have on all those things, okay, you've got all the accoutrement to mm-hmm. go get a job.
Okay, let's get out of the metaphor right. now. We got
right,
a little high-centered on this metaphor.
But I still think we could continue
right.
on with it just to
right.
torture you all,
so
right? So here we are.
Structural impediments are
into the river.
Things that make this thing you thought you were doing impossible,
and you spent a lot of time getting a hella nice boat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've got
really
you didn't
nice. Your
not,
PhD is super nice. Your dissertation was awesome. Your publication right. record's solid.
Right, you're not in
not,
one of those
not
like,
a Walmart kayak.
Right, you're not in a you know a sport Dick's Sporting Goods yellow boat that they call a kayak that should never be more than 2 feet from the shore.
Right.
So you actually got a nice kayak.
Mm-hmm.
And you make the mistake of thinking
right.
because your kayak is really good, you get to dictate where the river goes.
Right.
And so what I mean about fighting the current is you can see it's going this way.
Well, you know what else is so great about this metaphor is that you do see other people making it through.
Oh, yeah.
And not even necessarily their kayaks aren't as nice as yours.
Right.
So
because they went through when the water was a lot higher.
Uh-huh. They went
right.
through when the water was higher. Oh, my God. I love this metaphor.
We have perfected metaphor. Yeah. We have come up with something that I know that somebody out there is, well, it doesn't work this way.
Right.
Write us in the comments
because
we're not seeing it right now. We're seeing perfections. But do write us. It doesn't work if you do this. Mm-hmm. But seriously, though, I mean, mm-hmm. if you really think about it, you get in the river that is a work life.
Mm-hmm.
And you soon begin to say it's a river of the PhD,
mm-hmm.
and then it's the river of the academic career, when it remains the river of a work life.
Mm-hmm.
And so
right.
the first thing to do is to stop fighting the river.
Mm-hmm.
The most exhausting thing you can do mm-hmm. is paddle against the current, paddle mm-hmm. out of the current. You can have a nice run.
Navigate a river that is not navigable, which some are not at different times of the year.
Absolutely. The water's too low.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some massive change in the structure of the
right.
river. You know, every year in places, the place where we live, there are big storms, and every year there's a big tree that comes down across the river. And the people who know the river is the river, the guides, they go down and check for those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're looking for. Where have the impediments and what are we going to do to change our path?
Right.
They don't jump in a boat with six people and say, let's go down the river after this massive storm. Oh, sorry about this big log. Oh, now we've all hit it. Now we've all died. That's not the way.
Right.
It's not the way you run a river. And it's
right.
not the way you run a work right. life.
And if I could just go with that little bit of the metaphor, I feel like the professor is in has been a guide.
Yes.
Has been like the rafting guide saying, here,
right.
like, look,
this
is how you get down this river.
And I feel like we've been
And sometimes
saying,
guides can't
right.
help you because the river is not navigable. And right.
right
now in 2020, leading into 2021, with the collapse of the academic higher ed economy, it's really not navigable.
Right. And so the first thing is, you know, I know it's probably broken record or demoralizing you or whatever, but I saw somebody on Twitter yesterday say, I think the academy is higher education is collapsing. I think it's actually collapsing. But I think that it was a larger thing, like it as an entity may be disappearing.
Right. I saw that tweet. Yeah.
And so I think it's really, we want to kind of always walk between like the doomsday, you know, it's all going to. And look, folks, we got to look here. The water's really low.
Mm-hmm.
Down this branch of the river.
And please read the articles coming out of the Chronicle of Higher Ed that I'm posting every single day that a new one comes out, which are the facts and figures, the people who are yeah. charged with examining the budgetary realities of higher ed. They are looking at enrollments, which they can do now that fall semester's over. They're looking at fall 2020, and there, and these are, you know, in a sea of, switch metaphors, but in a sea of gaslighting that is PhD training and academia, the numbers are real.
They are real.
I mean, and they dictate what money, in terms of tuition in particular, but other things, other revenue streams that universities have available to open lines.
And obviously there are a whole bunch of people from different disciplines listening right now. And I know, like, for folks in economics and accounting and
epidemiology
and some of the other sciences, especially as we watch universities devote so much time to STEM, so much money to STEM, you're going to see jobs. There are jobs. Sure, mm-hmm. There are jobs. I think there are fewer jobs.
Well, I actually have someone who got in touch yesterday to ask for help with a position in German, tenure track position in German.
I mean, they're there. Yeah. It's like I was talking to somebody in accounting the other day, and she said, it's dramatically increased, but I was able to apply for 30 jobs.
Mm-hmm. Increased.
It's dramatically decreased, okay. But I was able to apply for 30 jobs.
So that's
she said, but that's a lot less than I might have applied for before. But that's a practical, that's mm-hmm. a skills-based thing that you can see mm-hmm. why it might not. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. That's just a way of me saying, I know that there's always going to be a what about. You can throw me what abouts, and I'm going to say globally, mm-hmm. we're in a bit of a world of hurt. So if you keep fighting that current, now, then you're going to flip. You're going to get high centered. You're going to get over in an eddy and spin and spin and spin and spin and spin. You're not going to be using the river to its advantage. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be rolling with it. You're going to be fighting it, and it will exhaust you.
Right.
And potentially harm. I mean, harm you.
So the deal is looking for the spaces between the obstacles.
Right.
And what are those? And of course, you know, again, there are no. There aren't a ton of bright lights in the economy or in any job market. Right. I like totally acknowledge that. But by looking more widely at more options, you're going to see more potential pathways than just looking at only the one.
Right.
So, but I actually think, no, I just want to go back. Our listeners are probably on it already, but I always reiterate points. But the river is not the academic career.
Right.
The river is your work life, your life that includes work,
right?
Money making, income stream.
It's your income stream.
It's your income stream.
We can even sue stream.
Look at
that. Look
at us.
Oh my God. I would be, if you're rolling your eyes right now, I understand.
Yeah.
So the second we are
easily entertained, and we entertain each other.
And we roll our eyes at each other. So the second part of that, though, just going on with the river metaphor, is if you want to successfully run a river, you don't look where you don't want to go.
Yeah, for sure. Because your eye, that was the other thing your dad taught us.
Right.
Your kayak follows your eyes.
Right. So if you look at the rocks, mm-hmm. hello, rock.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's
so
weird.
This is the part where sort of the assignment for you as you begin to think about this, and this is staying or going, folks, where do you want to go?
And look at that.
Like, start to write out. And I guess the most important thing about the rock is that we can imagine it. By focusing on the rock, we look and obsess on the obstacles. So if you're working right now, you have a tenure track position, you have reached absolute maximum, you do not want to stay there, or you're seeing your university collapse around you, it is really, really easy to keep looking at what you think can't be done,
mm-hmm.
right? I'll never get another job. I'll never do this. You're mm-hmm. looking at the rocks.
Well, I would say that it is fundamental to the academic temperament overall, and there are, of course, exceptions, but it's a rule that the academic temperament looks at what can't be done. That is, I mean, in my career, that was 100%, and in my own life, mm-hmm. prior to leaving the academy, that was 100% true. You looked at what couldn't be done. I can't do that. That's not possible.
Right. I wonder if that carries over into STEM.
Oh, good question.
Yeah. I know humanities, it's like, how can we disassemble this until it has no joy left?
Yeah. Well, and when I really got to know that, I got to know that myself and observing my own negativity bias and my own, you know, glass half empty, and as it applied to when my own transition out of the academy,
right.
I can't do that. I'll never work. But also, when I was department head, and I would try to get the faculty to do things, as opposed to just being a colleague where you're just, you know, you're just whatever, doing each in your own office, doing your own thing. But when you're a department head, you have to get people to do stuff. That's when you see, oh, no, we can't do that. That will never work. That's a bad idea. Nope. Here's what's wrong with your thinking.
Right. I wonder how different that would be if you were department chair at Oregon.
Because the
Illinois in particular, and I don't know about the whole Midwest, but the Illinois experience was very much like, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. We tried that one time 25 years ago. It didn't work.
Oregon was always totally different. And even though we're
to the detriment.
Yeah. But even though we're not there anymore, and I mean, although we still live here in Eugene and we have a ton of friends and pay attention, I mean, the news out of U of O, like, I do see more of that than we used to. When we were actually faculty there.
That can't be done.
But I still think the ethos is
so,
the same.
Anyway, okay, digression. That's the rock. That's the rock. You're looking at the rock. You're looking at the rock. You cannot run the river if you don't know where you want to go. Mm-hmm. So as you think about what you want to do, begin to make lists about what you want to do. Years ago, I mentioned this on a previous podcast, like some kind of what color is your parachute thing. You had to list your 10 things you wanted in a job. Mm-hmm. Now, when I talked about it before, it was like to keep you from taking something out of fear. But I'm thinking about more about like, where do you want to aim?
Well, like, and what's crazy about that is the audacity of it in an academic context. Right. Because, and I have shared this on a podcast episode, but Katie Rose Guest Priall, who wrote the book, The Freelance Academic, which is based on her columns that she wrote in the Chronicle. And she has this manifesto from one of her early columns that is like my 5-point manifesto. I'm going to live in a place I love. I'm going to live near people I love. I'm going to stop torturing myself by applying for academic jobs, you know, and a couple others.
So then that's your path.
That's the manifesto.
Yeah.
Oh, shoot. I had something I was going to say about that.
Well, it is exactly what we're talking about, though. It's saying where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
the audacity of it.
The audacity,
So that academics, that's really quite shocking, I think, because what do you mean we're allowed? Because over the 8 to 10 years that you are getting yourself into a position to get that PhD and to apply for tenure-track jobs, you basically absorb these reality, quote-unquote realities, that I can't dictate where I'm going to live.
Right.
Well, like, that's not a thing.
Right.
And so to say out loud and write it down in black and white on a piece of paper and say, I'm going to live near people I love, that is that might not sound like a lot. And I would say that's a sign of a massive paradigm shift in your own mind.
And I think if you go back and look at our column, Ivory Tower in the Rearview Mirror, which we need to post some new stuff to that. Ivory Tower in the Rearview Mirror, you will see a repeated theme of people saying, I did not want to. I wanted to live in X. I wanted to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And that even as I read them, I had that little bit of a like,
well, who do you think you are?
Well, no. That's the way
certainly
you think,
that
not
I
the
would
way
have
I would think,
thought. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
no, it was more just like, well, that's bold. Wow. Because what if they're, you know, flipping automatically into fear?
To right? Scarcity.
Like,
what if there's no jobs?
What if you can't, you know, what if you can't? And then I think, what if you can't? Like, what if you can't, if your work-life river is going to say, I'm going through the V that is, I'm going to live in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. What's going to happen for you and the way that river runs is going to be right in there. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to be over on some other eddy or even along the side. That's Montreal, right? You're going to say, no, whatever the opportunities are here in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And for academics who've been trained way, way long, you're going to go where the opportunity is. You're going to take this job because it's there. You're going to go to Central
Arkansas. And not be in Toronto because
that's a tenure track job.
Right.
And
what before I forget, though, I just want to say that, yes, your mind is saying, like you just said, your mind went there. I said my mind went there. We're telling you, the listener, your mind's going to go there. Now let me remind you, your friends' minds are going to go there.
Oh, yeah.
Your professors' minds are going to go there. Your colleagues, they're going to articulate this stuff that we just said. They're going to say, you can't do that.
Right.
That, what are you talking about? That's not a thing. You don't get to dictate where you live. And so, yeah, it's going to be really rough for you in confronting all of that negative messaging from yourself and from all the people around you.
Right. And just a reminder, from 12-step and RuPaul. Other people's opinion of you is not your business. It's their stuff. Let them have it. Let them think what they want. Doesn't matter what they think. You do what brings you joy. Mm-hmm. And that means I'm going to go down the V in the river that's Toronto, and I may actually end up working in a job that there's not another PhD around me, but damn it, I am in Toronto, and that's what my joy mm-hmm. was. So
Sylvester Stallone just said that to the, what's his name, in the episode of season two of This Is Us that I watched last night.
Oh,
he said, other people's opinions of you do not matter. And if I had cared about other people's opinions of me back in the day, I never would have written Rocky.
Which is probably true.
I'm sure it's true. Yeah. You could tell he was saying the real thing. Wrote, he wasn't a character. He was playing himself.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah.
Because I'm not sure he can play a character anymore. Has he ever played a character?
I'm not sure.
He's just played Sylvester Stallone. Anyway, so we digress. But so those are the two things that we want. We want to leave you with as we leave this, how to leave your toxic relationship, either for reals or for metaphorically with the Academy, is you have to decide where you want to go. And then you start aiming your boat that direction. Because when you kayak a river, you don't get in at the put in point and thinking about the end point. You get into the river and begin navigating it mm-hmm. based on the information that you're getting
well,
at the time.
That's another great that's another reason this metaphor is so good,
right.
Is because it isn't really about point A to point B when you're running a river.
Right.
It's about the process
right.
of, and each of the smaller things, you know, the rapids that you're going through.
Right.
Are the challenge at the moment.
Right. And if you're in the boat and you're thinking, well, the put out is, you know, Shady Cove. Mm-hmm. Well, the putout's at Shady Cove. You know, the putout's at Shady Cove. Yeah, guess what? There are four rocks right here. We have to decide which way to go. Could we look over the rocks and see which way is going to lead us to the next spot?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we just want to keep saying where we're going to take out?
Because
mm-hmm. where we're going to take out is, sorry, it's put in and take out.
Yeah.
I got that wrong. So just stop yourselves. Like,
right.
You don't know what the end point's going to be.
Right.
You know where you'd like to go.
Right. And give yourself permission to have that change as well. And to know that it's, well, I guess, yeah, that in the sense that as you gain more knowledge, that end point vision might change. And
well,
that's
the takeout is when you stop working.
Well, the takeout, yeah, the takeout is, I mean,
that's
the takeout
it.
Is arbitrary.
Right.
Like it's you just, don't have to take out at any particular takeout. You
right.
can say, I'm having so much fun. I said I was going to take out here, but I'm going to take out down there. And then I guess I'll call my ride on the cell phone to see if they can come bring the truck down to this other place. Like,
right.
there's logistical hassles, especially if there's no cell service in the mountains. Okay.
Now this we've really gone off the rails.
But
anyway,
is that logistical thing is always what hangs me up with,
right.
with kayaking, because I'm like, oh, rivers, on rivers.
Right.
Because
like,
I'm like, this
no,
is
no,
like,
we gotta get a
oh
ride
my
back.
God, we have to get a ride back.
But wait,
anyway,
I really want to. I
have a story I want to tell, though.
Okay, but I just feel like that was one of my metaphor brilliances, that the takeout is unknown because the takeout is when you stop working.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get into the river saying, the place I come out, the place I get to is this kind of job, you're not navigating it and paying attention to what you want to do and where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really self-selecting, because people in the Academy, my experience is, don't like conflict, don't like change, want to get in a rut, stay in it, get some security and be left alone. Totally get that. Guess what? That river doesn't really exist anymore.
Mm-mm.
So now what are you going to do?
Anymore.
So now, story?
Yeah. Well, this story was slightly more apropos to earlier in the in our conversation, but I was on Twitter, as I often am, and somebody tweeted, How do you gain, as an academic, how do you gain the know-how to start a small business?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you do? Do you take classes?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do it? And this got, and then he added me as someone who is, you know, well-known for starting a business after being an academic, as well as several other people who run well-known businesses, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. PhD to Life and Chris Cornthwaite, who does Rooster Vane. I just want to give a shout out to these mm-hmm. lovely people who run really wonderful businesses. Anyway, and we all started answering. And it was a really interesting set of responses because literally every one of us, we were quite independent of each other. Like I could tell that we weren't responding. We were just all seeing it when we saw it, answering when we saw it. We all said, you just jump in and do it. Mm. You don't take classes. Mm. You just do it. You just start doing it. And then you find out what you don't know. And then you figure it out on the fly. And one person said a very sour comment, not one of the people he added, a random person, don't know who it was, said, you have to read all of the books about labor law and you have to become an expert about labor law before you even begin to think about starting a business.
Such a PhD answer.
And it was such a PhD answer. And I was
a fear answer. You're going to make a mistake.
Yeah. So I was so aggravated with that. And I said, no, you do not. You start and you figure it out. And then that very angry person said, I've worked for so many shitty bosses and they didn't know labor law and they're exploitative. And all you're going to do is reproduce the exploitation of the academy in your business. And possible. I'm like, well, yeah, it's possible. But I mean, like, what? That's like such a weird PhD kind of answer. Yes.
So here, I'm going to say that I think that I'm going to play counterpoint here, that I think both answers were the extreme. Mm-hmm. I think that if we're going to stick with the river, before you get in it, you have to understand the skills that you need.
Yes.
So that as you decide where you want to go, you do have to go understand
the
technical skills that you need and the cultural skills
that you need. Which, of course, when I started The Professor's Inn, I studied all kinds of things.
Right. So I think the answer is just jump in is not actually the right advice. The right advice is you look at where you want to go. I shouldn't say right. The advice I would give looking where you want to go is say, what kind of technology knowledge do you need to do that? Do you need to take a class to learn how to do a website? Do you need this? Because you're kind of leaving out how you trained yourself with Etsy.
I did train myself with Etsy. But the thing was, is I never said I can't run a business selling jewelry. I just said, well, for heaven's sake, Etsy has like 10,000 people selling jewelry. If they can do it, I can do it too.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, we had an episode where I quoted my mother and her aphorism of don't be a victim of your lesser talents.
Right.
My mother's other big aphorism I grew up with is if someone else can do it, I can do it too.
Right. And I'm not denying that. Mm-hmm. I think that if you want to go somewhere, that sometimes there's knowledge you don't have and that there is knowledge that you can get, understanding the cultural milieu, understanding the technology, 100%. Understanding the labor laws.
Absolutely.
Now, I also think you have to learn everything because, you know, capitalism is evil. Capitalism is evil.
Right.
You certainly should be working from a place of non-exploitation and compassion at all points. Right. But that you don't have to learn every labor law to start. And I think that's a really dangerous place because with academics, they feel like I have to have a PhD in starting a business.
Right. I think that that's what fueled all of our universal reactions was that we all, because we're all PhDs, we understand PhD bias. Uh-huh. And so the idea, what we are all fighting against is, no, you don't need a PhD in starting a business to start a business.
Right.
And yeah, that did totally underplay the learning that is required.
And if you have the typical PhD mentality of risk averse, conflict averse, failure averse, that you do need somebody to say, you can build yourself a nice platform out there. You don't just have to do Indiana Jones and the whatever one it was where he just stepped into the void and the path appeared. You can actually begin to lay your path.
Right.
It's okay. Mm. It's not a cliff. You're not going to fall all the way off of it. So I do think that, you know.
That's the story I tell. I mean, when I do my starting a small business and my going post-doc in a pandemic webinars, I always make a point to mention the jewelry business because that was a really low, no risk, actually, since I still had a job, no risk way of getting my feet wet with some basic business
and even just principles. Watching other people do it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to get a PhD, but you could actually go read and look at somebody who does a really good job at what they do and say, how did this person do it? You know, you can go look at Jane Jones at Up In Consulting and look at her website, what she offers, how it's shifted over time.
Yep.
What, you know, if you're on her email list, which I suggest that you get on, you'll just see an exceptional use of email as a way to engage and educate. So I think that there's a lot to learn from other people, right, but I don't think we actually just jump in. I think we learn a lot mm-hmm. before we jump in, but that's just my thing. Anyway, we're out of time.
Are we?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, I wanted to add one more thing, which we just said, but I want to say it concisely. I've said it a couple times now. As you're starting to think about these things, begin to make a list of the skills that you need to acquire. Not that you have to become a PhD in whatever, mm-hmm. but is there something you need to know how to do? If you've mm-hmm. never designed a website, then go over to Squarespace and get a website with your own name on it mm-hmm. and put it together.
Yeah.
Right? Or go sell something on Etsy and learn how to hook up a payment thing and mm-hmm. promote something.
I've always been so surprised at, like, I have two different friends who are artists.
Uh-huh.
And both of them do beautiful art, and both of them really would love to sell their art. They would love to. And I have said to them both, why don't you have a little Etsy shop? That's a very easy, low risk way to start. I mean, it might not be the only thing you do, but it's easy. And they're like, oh yeah, I don't know.
Well, that's really self-promotion is super hard.
And it's like, it's really like just, do it. Throw the noodle at the wall and see what sticks. So throw the Etsy noodle at the wall. And there's always aggravation and some time involved. But remember, Etsy wouldn't be as popular as it is if they made it impossible. It's not impossible. You can learn how to list something on there and see how you feel about it. And if you don't like it, then shut it back down and don't do something else.
Well, and I think also that you hit, we're going over our normal about 35 minutes, but I think that you hit on something really critical, that self-promotion mm-hmm. in the academy is really looked down on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of sort of mm-hmm. by people who are constantly promoting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of pushback when you see people out there in front saying, I do this, I do this, I do this. And I see that when people, and we were going to mention this, we're not doing any more of the practical stuff because you can do LinkedIn on your own, but LinkedIn is one of those places when I talk to academics about putting their thing up on LinkedIn, they get all like, oh, it's kind of unsavory. It's mm-hmm. just a self-promotion thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because right.
you're your brand.
Right.
So let's get real right. and do that. So I just wanted to add that.
We should probably talk about that. I mean, not LinkedIn per se or not Etsy per se, but I don't know, more about just embracing the challenge of using of websites, of Etsy, of commerce, right. of LinkedIn.
We should get somebody on to talk about how they did it, because we can talk about how we did it, but
yeah.
we don't, well, another thing.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep.
Be sure and subscribe. You are helping us continue to offer this advice. So again, bit.ly/TPIIPOD will take you to the link to subscribe, $3.99 a month.
And remember that you can now look at the podcast on theprofessorsin.com/podcast. And the cool part about them now is that you can actually comment on the mm-hmm. podcast on the page right. so we can interact with you there. So come and tell us what you think of the river metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye.